Hello and welcome back to Vox Popcast, the weekly pseudo-academic roundtable of pop culture analysis with drinking and swearing. My name is Christopher Maverick, but you can call me Mav, and I am... nobody showed up. This is weird. It's one of those times where it's not so much that nobody showed up. We're going to do what my friend calls the Swapcast. We're going to do a joint show between us and our friends over at the Protagonist Podcast, because Joe and Andrew contacted me and they're like, we're going to talk about the Oscars on our show. We figure you have thoughts. And I do. And, you know, you've heard some of the thoughts the last couple of episodes, not last couple of episodes, because we went out of order. But recently we had our Oscar game, so I can tell you how we did with our Oscar scoring. But also, you know, I'm looking forward to discussing them with some people that I haven't talked to. So welcome back to the show, Joe and Andrew. Hey guys, how's it going?
Hello. Thank you for having us on.
Thank you for asking me to do your show and be like, oh, sure, yeah, that's easy. I can just pencil that in for next week on our show.
It's always nice to just double dip when you're a podcaster and just
that's right. I can't remember who did it. Somebody had one of my favorite podcast concepts ever, and their entire show was just being a guest on other people's show. So whatever they were on like that week, it would be like tonight I am a guest on the Protagonist Podcast, and that week it would just be an episode of the Protagonist, and then the next week he'd be on my show and be like, tonight I'm a guest on Vox Popcast. Here's how that conversation went. And the entire show was just him being on other shows.
Matt, are you sure this wasn't you?
No, but I want to get
because it seems like something you could do.
So what are we talking about this week?
This week we are talking about Academy Award mistakes, or maybe things where, looking back, we might award different films or performances than what actually won the Academy Awards. And producer Andrew, you have done some research to get ready for this discussion as well, correct?
Isn't that what we were doing?
Oh yeah, you were locked and loaded. Yep. This isn't off the dome. Like, you are really ready to go to talk about the Academy Awards now, right?
I looked through a number of Wikipedia pages that had the list of certain Academy Award categories, and I took pictures when I said, "Hey, that's interesting."
So we're not just doing this Oscars; we're doing like the history of the Oscars, basically.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and I thought we might slot into like tiers from that was an egregious mistake to there were lots of good options, mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, oh, you know, that one won, but I can understand why, but there were some other good ones. But sometimes it's like, how did that one win? And how did this other one not win?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we'll, when we talk about a mistake, I'm thinking we'll also slot it into somewhere on that spectrum.
And sure. I mean, this is also going to be filled with like Oscar trivia, because that's what some of these things already are.
Mm-hmm. So on our show, like we recently had, you know, Monica and Hannah and my wife Stephanie and I, we played the Oscar game where we filled out ballots live. Well, we didn't do it live on the air. We'd filled them out ahead of time, but we gave like our Oscar results, or not our Oscar results. We gave our Oscar guesses, and then we tried to figure out, you know, how we do. And I won. I'm very proud to say that, but not by much. Monica was only, you know, she's one behind me. I got 17 for 23, and she went 16 for 23. So that's pretty good.
That's pretty accurate there for both of
you. Yeah. So I mean, but you guys don't do that on your show. Do you guys, like, in your personal life, do you play the Oscar ballot game?
I have played and won in the past at an Oscar party at a friend's house. We did it. Like, I don't know how to describe it. For Joseph, I would call it cross-country scoring, but like reverse number scoring. And so if there were 10 nominees in the category, I got to rank them in what I thought would be the most likely win order. And if if my rank number one was correct, then I got 10 points. If my rank number two was correct, I got 9 points, and okay, so sure. on. That was a lot of work, and my friend was super amazing for doing that, and she really committed to it, and she tabulated everyone's scores throughout the night as each award was given.
Wow.
And I was astounded. I totally dominated at that one. I was really proud of myself. It was the year that Birdman won. I still remember the party. But that's like my favorite memory. But it was also like, wow, that's a lot of work. But you can automate it in some degree. But also, you need people who like really want to have that kind of party.
I want to go to your friend's party because I'm insane enough that I want to play that game. Mm-hmm. And I'm fairly certain. No, I'm positive nobody in my life is willing to indulge me on this. Like, there's no way.
There were a lot of other people at the party who were not interested in actually writing out their ranking of all the nominees of every category.
Yeah.
And I did, which is probably one of the reasons that I won.
Because you were getting a point in every category. Whereas everyone else was just like, here's my top pick.
Like, everyone's guaranteed at least 1 point in every category if you just fill out the whole list.
Right.
But also, it's like, that's a lot of data.
And there would have been 24 points back then. There would have been 24 categories back then. There's 23 now. Wow, that's fascinating. But 24 again next year. I'm really a big fun. Oscar crazy person.
What is coming? What's the new category that's being?
Casting director.
Or is it coming back? No. That's right. I remember seeing that.
Casting directing is becoming a category. And so previously, sound editing and sound mixing were two separate categories. And a couple of years ago, they combined them into one category called sound because most regular people didn't understand the difference anyway. And they had to try and explain it at every broadcast. And it was always comically funny, you know, watching some engineer from the Academy try to explain the difference. And I understood the difference. So like it was great because in the old days, if you understood how sound mixing and sound editing worked, it was a good way to pick up 2 points and like sort of sort of float you above the field in the but now you can only get 1 point, you know, and everybody tends to get it. So though everybody in the Vox Pop pool got that wrong. If you listen to our show, we all voted for Oppenheimer for sound, and Oppenheimer did not win. Zone of Interest did. So that'd be the first one that I would say was sort of didn't turn out the way we thought it was going to.
Well, before we talk about some historical, maybe Oscar misfires, which I think are way easier. I first heard this concept from Bill Simmons that said on his podcast, he mentioned that there should be like a 5 year later Oscar awards.
A lot of people believe that. I'm on board. 5 or 10 even. One of the two.
Yeah. Where you see like which one is actually still in the conversation, has had an impact, maybe influenced films that came after versus... Mm-hmm. Had buzz for the 3 weeks, maybe because of a certain producer's incredible a campaign that maybe was just the site of grift. we may talk about that.
Nobody's going to try and grift you 5 years later.
It's not profitable. I mean, people would. Oscar campaigns. You know, and I wish we thought Monica was going to show up there.
That is not the topic we're here
but
for.
But Oscar campaigns are weird.
Take up a whole hour.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, and that's kind of the thing, right? Because like when I'm curious to think about the way, you know, we define this show, which is, you know, what do we feel like went wrong? Because I think the way Oscar campaigns work, I think that they sometimes really, you know, float the you know, who gets the Oscar the wrong way. So famously, for instance, Crash or Shakespeare in Love, some, you know, everyone's favorite best picture winner, Shakespeare in Love.
Still talked about incredibly frequently.
Yes.
That's in my list. I was like, Shakespeare in Love, really?
Yeah.
Over Saving Private Ryan.
Private Ryan. Shakespeare in Love, best picture winner. That was a choice that happened in 1998. Well, in 1999, I think for 1998.
Yeah. The list I have has the year 1998 next to those films.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And however they're listing it.
Yes. Beating Life is Beautiful, Elizabeth, Saving Private Ryan, and The Thin Red Line, Shakespeare in Love.
I mean, immediately I would say both Saving Private Ryan and Life is Beautiful are more discussed today. Immediately those ones. The other, like Thin Red Line, probably, you know, that one's kind of faded, I think, but Saving Private Ryan,
I would argue that Thin Red Line would, had Thin Red Line won the Oscar, or even had Saving Private Ryan won the Oscar, I think Thin Red Line would have stayed more in the conversation. I think that Thin Red Line faded from the conversation because people are too busy saying, yeah, but that was the year of Shakespeare in Love, and how did that happen?
Well, okay, this is something I want to touch on before we really dive into these mistakes. I just want to say, like, why do we think this matters? Why do we care when the Academy Award, we feel like it gets it wrong?
Yeah.
Because we want to appreciate things that deserve to be appreciated, and we want to not be wrong when we appreciate something. Like, we like it's embarrassing. I think that's what it comes down to, is like, oh, we all felt like this was the most important thing at a certain time, and like 6 months later, we came to our senses, or we realized something, and it feels like it's embarrassing.
I'm a little different. I care because, so I actually find the surprises exciting, right? Like when a Shakespeare in Love beats a Saving Private Ryan, I'm not embarrassed by it. I mean, like I am firmly confident in my belief that Saving Private Ryan is a better movie. I was then and I am today. So like, I don't feel embarrassed by it. I'm more, you know, as a scholar, I go, wow, that happened. Let's talk about how that happened. Cause that's crazy.
It's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
It won a lot of Oscars. It means more like in terms of, hey, let's explore this. So like as a scholar and as like a philosopher, and you're like, this feels like a mistake. Let's dig into it.
Yes. So that's I think a lot of people don't.
You have to recognize that it feels like a mistake.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people do take it personally in a, you know, like people grumble and get mad. So this one in particular, and I'd say probably Crash
winning is probably.
Yeah. Are the two where people are demonstrably angry, you know, to this day, where people are like, oh, that happened.
I think people feel probably not as extremely, but people feel kind of dismissive about Green Book.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, that was, we know what was going on there.
I'm not as, you know, Hannah on my show, like Hannah, very much, she quit watching the Oscars for a time because of the Green Book win. I've always been more forgiving of it.
I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm just speaking for what I hear.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's there.
Like,
yeah.
I don't have as strong an opinion about these things, but it's like, I think collectively people feel kind of dismissive about Green Book, but like you said, angry about a few.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one reason why people care is that this does become a shorthand for greatness. And we look back through the history of film and like who won the Academy Award does matter for our quick mental Rolodex of, oh, those are really, you know, these are the best films.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if we feel like either like a great film was snubbed or maybe a not great film won. I mean, sometimes like the snub is really just there were a lot of great films that year. That absolutely happens. And we may touch on some of those. Mm-hmm. But Tombstone. Sometimes it's like, wait. Yeah.
Tombstone, absolutely. Which we talked about on your show. Yes.
Yeah. But sometimes it's also just like, wait, why is, you know, for example, like Citizen Kane didn't win. And that didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like that one at least has floated to the top enough of like film discourse that everyone knows Citizen Kane, but then they're shocked when it doesn't have the extra stamp of Academy Award on it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a matter of like, okay, then you need the context for why it didn't win. Because if you go to 100 people and you tell them that Wizard of Oz did not win Best Picture, you're going to get upwards of 90 people who are like, what? What do you mean it didn't win Best Picture? Like, it's Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
it's one of the greatest. You know, it's one of the greatest. But then, yeah, you put it in the context and like the list of movies that came out in 1939. It's like, well, okay. I mean, if you were doing an Oscars for like 10 years and the 1939 Oscars are in there, it's got the best movies. Like, they packed somehow like six of the best movies from 10 years into a single year.
So what came out that year, Andrew, for a listener?
List. Yeah.
Okay, so in 1930, well, it's like, I mean, the 1939 listing Oscars is Gone with the Wind, which won.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Dark Victory, Goodbye, Mr. Chips,
mm-hmm.
Love Affair, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which is a movie people still watch.
Uh-huh.
Ninotchka. We want to feel good about politics. Oh, that's nice.
Goes to watching. Ninotchka, Of Mice and Men, Stagecoach, Wizard of Oz, Wuthering Heights.
Uh-huh. Like, just true classics in a multitude of genres right there.
Yes. And you're like, oh, yeah, like, other years, like, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington wins. If it's not up against this same set of movies, that could totally win. Mm-hmm. Wizard of Oz probably should win. Yeah. But it's like,
I mean,
it wins in that year. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, so of that year, Dark Victory, no one cares about it anymore. I'd say Goodbye, Mr. Chips. People still care, but only film scholars.
Stagecoach.
Yeah. Stagecoach and Love Affair both are cared about by film scholars. But Mr. Smith, Mice and Men. Well, Mice and Men was a classic novel, so that's why. But
people
cheating on their homework.
And it still may get stoned for homework. Yeah.
Right. But Wizard of Oz, Wuthering Heights, same thing. That's a hell of a year in film.
That is better than like the last 6 years combined.
so like 1939, if you want to argue any of those other ones, it goes on the end of our spectrum of there were just a lot of good things that year.
Right.
Not this was an egregious mistake.
OK, so in a similar category, do you guys know who is the Oscar losingest actor, meaning the man who has been nominated for the most Academy Awards as an actor that did not win?
Oh, as an actor. I was going to say.
And has never won?
Has never won?
He did never win. He is not alive anymore. He was nominated for Best Actor, not supporting, no supporting actor nominations, Best Lead Actor 8 times. And he lost every single time. Oof. And then he was given an honorary award for like his body of work.
The Lifetime Achievement kind of award. Now they just give that for whatever performance someone does in their 70s.
But he did not win.
Does Cagney have an Oscar? Cagney. I go Cagney.
It is not Cagney.
Okay. Is it Tracy? Spencer Tracy?
Nope. It is Peter O'Toole.
Oh, okay. We were in the right track. It was in that vein. Okay, sure. Okay.
So would you like to know what he lost for?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Hit us.
In 1962, he was in Lawrence of Arabia. He's awfully young, you know, doing that one. And gets nominated for Best Actor. He loses to Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, like, all right. Yeah, I get it. In 64, he loses to Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady.
Okay. What was he nominated for?
He was in Beckett.
Sure. Mm. Okay. I've never seen Beckett, but I have seen My Fair Lady and Harrison's good. So sure.
Also nominated that year, Peter Sellers for Dr. Strangelove.
Okay. Tough competition. So sure.
Yeah. Tough year. Yeah. 1968.
Which one was he? Was he nominated for? Or was he just nominated for Dr. Strangelove?
All I see is Peter Sellers in Dr. Strangelove.
What's next?
In 1968, he was in The Lion in Winter. He lost to Cliff Robertson in Charlie.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's a classic Academy Award. You're
picking there. Films that are just like the things that you watch if you're a film studies major.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. So he's just got the bad fortune of just being up against the greatest movies of all time every time he's nominated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In 1969, he was nominated for Goodbye, Mr. Chips. I guess a remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he lost to John Wayne in True Grit.
Huh. I see it.
Yeah.
It's a Lifetime Achievement. Wayne.
That's a Lifetime Achievement. John Wayne getting the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah, it's like, so that one's like, all right.
I guess. Okay.
In 1972, he was in The Ruling Class. Do you know what he lost to for that one?
72? 72 is the year of, no, it's not the year of Godfather.
I was about to say Godfather. That's exactly where it was.
He lost to Marlon Brando.
Okay, you're doing the year the movies came out. I was going to say Godfather would be the 73 Oscars, but you're saying the year of 72. Yes, okay, yes, it would have been.
Wikipedia is not consistent
on I got it.
These dates necessarily. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he lost to Marlon Brando in 1980. Mm-hmm. He was in The Stuntman, and he lost to Robert De Niro in Raging Bull. In 1982, he was in My Favorite Year, and he lost to Ben Kingsley in Gandhi.
So we're oddly, because I'm such a fault. I'm such a weird Oscar nerd. We're now to the portion of the Oscars where 82. I'm 8 years old, so I'm watching the show and riveted because I'm the weird guy who like I've been this my entire life. So 82. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember when Gandhi won, and that was like everyone knew that Gandhi was going to win. And it was just like, thanks for showing up. It's an honor to be nominated.
In 2006, and I think this was like, okay, maybe we can get Peter O'Toole his lifetime achievement, like get him an actual win here. He was in Venus. He lost to Forrest Whitaker in The Last King of Scotland. Also nominated that year, Leonardo DiCaprio in Blood Diamond, Ryan Gosling in Half Nelson, and Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness.
So everybody's gotten one for him.
I mean, that's one where it's like, yeah, give him a lifetime achievement award. He didn't like... None of those feel egregious that he lost, right?
No, it's like just, it all makes sense. It's like, well, really, what really, are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, each of these years, but
he could have won for True Grit, but it was, but I get it. It was him or John Wayne, and that's John Wayne's only Oscar. So it's 69. So John Wayne would have been nominated, and you know what it would have been in 1969. You'd be going, John Wayne's getting up there. And we need to make sure he gets an Oscar.
Peter O'Toole's going to have five or six more chances. Peter O'Toole's going to
get more chances. He's going to get one eventually. Yeah, okay.
For the record, Glenn Close also has 8 nominations. I think about half as lead and half as supporting actress and has never won.
Okay. Oh, she didn't. Okay. Because Fatal Attraction, she doesn't win for. What'd she lose to for Fatal Attraction?
I'm just gonna guess it was Meryl Streep, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have it pulled up right now for hers, but like the Peter O'Toole one, it's just like, man, that is some bad luck.
Mav, do you have like a for you like this one is definitely like just a not bad luck, just the wrong choice was made.
I've got a lot where, by the way, she, she lost for Fatal Attraction to Cher for Moonstruck. Fair. Meryl Streep for Ironweed was that year, but Glenn Close lost to Cher. So yeah, I do recall that.
Meryl Streep was nominated that year though?
Yeah, Meryl Streep was nominated for Ironweed. I mean, you could just assume that if Meryl makes a movie, it's rare that she doesn't. Yeah. Well, there are a few times where she has a couple of things where people are like, this one didn't work for us. But for the most part, Meryl, you know, I don't even remember how many nominations she has. It's a lot. I'm not even going to count. There's too many, you know, from the 51st Academy Awards was her first one for Deer Hunter to the 90th for The Post. Like she's just been nominated.
Meryl Streep has 21 nominations
and 17 for Best Actress and 4 for Supporting. Yeah.
But she's won some.
She's won
3 wins.
Yeah. Yeah. So like impressive, I guess, you know, there's none where I'm ever like this one. Well, okay, the one there where I'm think it was absolutely wrong was I think realistically you should have gone for Saving Private Ryan over Shakespeare in Love.
And we alluded to it, but there was a Harvey Weinstein era Weinstein, I think is how he says it, where he was famous for his Oscar pushes for films that he was a producer on.
One could argue he bought the award. That said, that's just what you do. Like it's not against the rules. Everybody gets it. So I understand, right? Like that's one where I don't feel good about it. I'm more okay with Crash winning. I understand why people, why it doesn't hold up and why people didn't like that it won. Crash and The Artist has to a lesser extent are ones where people are like, do we really win? But I'm
The Artist is one just where like no one has talked about The Artist since it won. Like, I can't remember.
I've watched it since then. I think it holds up. It's just not. I mean,
I watched it. It was fine.
Yeah, it's weird. It won because it was a weird throwback picture. So those weren't the ones where.
Oh, they loved award shows about Hollywood and the importance
of film. Right. That's what did it.
That's why it surprises me that Sunset Boulevard didn't win its year, is because mm-hmm. like, well, Hollywood loves Hollywood.
So my controversial one, though, like, because, you know, it's really easy to say that Saving Private Ryan should have won. My controversial one would be the 76 Academy Awards, which was for films in 2003, happens in 2004. And it's one that let's lose listeners on both shows. That's the year Return of the King
to say.
Yeah, that's the year Return of the King won, and it's wrong. Return of the Ring, King won for Lord of the Rings. It is a third of a movie. I understand why it won. I understand, like, I get it, right? But it's up against Lost in Translation, which is a better film. It just is. I'm sorry if you're a nerd that loves them. I'm a nerd too, and I enjoy that movie. Lost in Translation is a better film. It's also up against Mystic River, Master and Commander, and Seabiscuit. Amazing year in film.
Better film. Yeah.
Amazing year in film.
As a film, like, just as a self-contained film, I think Master and Commander is better than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, me too. And to me, I would have given it to Lost in Translation. So that's the one that rubs me the wrong way, where it's just like, you did this because you felt like you needed to award the achievement of, oh, wow, he actually pulled off filming all of films. Lord of the Rings.
You know, it was an award for the three films, not for the best film that came out.
It's really a special achievement award. And it shouldn't be the competitive Oscar. It should be considered a special achievement.
Yeah. And that's my flaw with it. Like, I'm more okay with giving Peter Jackson the Best Director award than I am with giving the film the Best Picture award.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. I think that's a really good take.
And it's and for complicated things of what these awards mean in my head, because I actually think that all the other films probably deserved it more. And in particular, like I said, I'm a big fan of Lost in Translation. I just think it's an amazing movie. So.
Yeah, for me that year, I think Master Commander, like, just standalone film itself. Well, Master Commander. Oh, man, I love that film. We have not talked about it on this podcast. We need to do that on ours at some point. For me, just going through, like, the Oscar history, like, you always see people mentioning, Citizen Kane lost to It's How Green Was My Valley, right? And that year, there was the Maltese Falcon, and Citizen Kane and Maltese Falcon have definitely had a longer shadow than How Green Was My Valley. But the thing that is most surprising to me is that Singing in the Rain wasn't even nominated.
anything.
Like, that is one of the most influential films ever. Like, just in recent history, you can't watch La La Land and Barbie are both just quoting Singing in the Rain left and right. And it's also surprising because we already joked about how Hollywood loves films about Hollywood and the importance of storytelling. And somehow Singing in the Rain wasn't even nominated. And if it was nominated, it should have won. That year, The Greatest Show on Earth won. Other films that were nominated were High Noon and The Quiet Man. I'd say High Noon and Quiet Man are better than The Greatest Show on Earth.
Ivanhoe was up that year. I guess it was just like Cecil B. DeMille spent money on this. I'm sure that's what happened. It's exactly the same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, same when I see that about Around the World in 80 Days is another one where it's like, hey, they spent a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, well,
yay money.
It looks good. But
yeah.
And also that one was just stuffed with cameos. So it became kind of a celebration of all the great Hollywood actors, right? Just for Around the World in 80 Days. But Singing in the Rain, not even being nominated for me, is one of the strangest moments in Hollywood history.
And it got, it got other nominations, just not for Best Picture.
It got two. Best Score and Best Supporting Actress for the actress who played Lena Lamont, who's her real name is escaping me right now.
Jean Hagen.
But thank you. But yeah, no one else was nominated and no directing nomination. what happened here?
It's one of those things where it's the retrospect thing, right? Like, to say, you talked about Maltese Falcon, right? Maltese Falcon is an amazing picture in in retrospect, but like in the moment, it's the third attempt at doing this, you know, at doing this genre detective novel, right? Like, you know, like I understand how I understand how someone might go, or, you know, are we really going to nominate this year's Batman? You know, like that, if you do it, if you do it in the modern day. Right. And
we had that.
Yeah. Right. So I understand how someone would do that. Right.
I was reading over the list and someone was like, their biggest snub was The Dark Knight not being nominated for Best Picture. I'm like, well, I'm fine with it not. But I understand someone wanting it to have been nominated or have won. They felt, I think they were arguing it should have won that year when it wasn't even nominated. But I that to me is
the
like
Dark
exactly
Knight
what you're describing.
For Best Picture.
Yeah,
no,
that's what they wanted. That, it was like a New York Times article too, where they were arguing this. I'm like,
sometimes I think even the I think just because it's the New York Times, that doesn't mean it's not a clickbait article.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a
like
there's
we got to get this one to get like Dark Knight fans on this one.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, so I mean that was 2008, right? And yeah. It's not all that, as far as, you know, it reminds me of when people wanted Black Panther to be nominated for Best Picture,
which it was.
And I was just like, well, yeah, but I mean, people were mad that it didn't win, because they pushed for it to be nominated, which happened because, you know, we can nominate 10 films now, so, you know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But then people were
which
like,
which is well, what they did specifically to get blockbuster films in, like Black Panther,
and I get it, right?
And Dark Knight.
I get why that happens, and I'm fine with that. But there's a lot of, you know, it's hard to say things did or didn't deserve it, because a lot of the times when people think of what they consider a snub for not winning, so this year with Barbie, right, the people who wanted Barbie to win Best Picture, it's sort of a, well, did you see the other movies?
It's the best movie you saw,
right? And that's kind of like, again, this is not me hating on Barbie. I love Barbie. I've seen Barbie 3 times, twice in the theaters.
Oh, I love it too. I've taught it already in classes.
I adore the film. I actually probably will teach it soon. I have not used it yet, but I have thought about it. It might be swapped into my pop culture class. So like, it's nothing against Barbie. It's that the Academy is not the People's Choice Awards, where Barbie did win Best Picture.
You know, and it also got all the money,
right? Yeah, it also won, like, at life, right? They just won billions of dollars, so, you know, that's so good for them, right? So like, I feel weird, you know, defending, you know, when people are trying to defend that, when it's sort of like, okay, I understand that you like this movie, but did you see American Fiction or Anatomy of the Fall or The Holdovers or Killers of the Flower Moon? And people were like, well, no, I didn't
or
see that.
Or Oppenheimer,
like,
that one.
Yes, or Oppenheimer. Well, I think in this case, Oppenheimer is one of those ones where a lot of people did see Oppenheimer and Barbie, and they liked Barbie better, because I think people are voting based on popular opinions. And
not
the Oscars are not about
artistic
that.
Merit.
Right.
It's supposed to be about artistic merit.
Well, they're about artistic merit as judged by a very specific elitist. Mm-hmm. You know, we did an episode of Vox Pop about Leavisism. It's a very specific elitist view of what culture should be. And I'm okay with them having their own award show. And I'm okay with other people having other award shows too. I think the People's Choice Awards are very important, and it's not the Academy's fault that people don't care as much about the People's Choice Awards. Perhaps you should, you know, is where I'm at with it. So like, I feel weird calling most things snubs. Where I think it's criminal is when it's a situation like Return of the King or Shakespeare in Love, where I feel like the Academy is violating their own sensibilities. And it's just like, what are you like? Seriously, what are you even doing here? Like,
because like, there's situations where, I mean, like if you look through the list, there's times where it's like definitely the best movie. And sometimes you look at it and you're like, that's probably the most movie of the year. And in some cases, that's convincing enough movie. To, you know, like it. So you get like this amalgam where it wins. And it's like, well, it's like the best most movie that you could have chosen.
Explain what you mean by most movie, just so we're all on the same page here.
Like Titanic is more movie than The Holdovers. I mean, like there's more movie going on.
Sure.
And sometimes that is going to tip the scales. You know, like Lord of the Rings, when it's winning the award, it's winning the award because it has done more movie than other smaller movies, quieter movies. And that doesn't mean that it's better, but it might mean that it did a better job at more things and they're awarding it for that. Like, there's some small movies that don't have any of the technical craft that other movies have, and that might be a disadvantage in,
I think,
in the voting at times. Like Oppenheimer, big movie, technical movie, holdovers, small movie, not technical.
So I think I believe that for some years, and yes, and
don't
in
mean
some
it cat- all the time.
Right. In some categories, like I especially sort of feel that way in the acting categories a lot, particularly in the supporting acting categories, because supporting acting is usually smaller roles. And I often feel as though someone might win an Academy Award for the most acting in one of those categories where, you know, where you really, where it's like really about, it's about one speech where you just really pour your heart out or something like that. That does happen sometimes.
Or there was an era where it seemed like if you were playing, you know, someone who was differently abled, right? Like, okay, right. Now you're going to be it. Like, you're being nominated now at the very least.
And, you know, or if it's just some, you know, that, or you just have a character where you can just really chew up the scenery, right? Like, that's so, like, I feel like you end up, I can't think of a good example of one of the ones where you have a most acting award, but like,
where you don't also feel like it was deserved.
Right. And again, I'm not even saying it's bad to do the most acting. Sometimes the character is written that way, right?
Like, or like, the like the King's Speech, it's all about this one speech, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or just like, so, you know, who's good at being the most actor? Denzel Washington. Denzel Washington, you put in a movie because you want to see him have a close up and him just yell at the screen about, you know, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. You want to see him do that, right? Like, that's part of the performance. And I'm okay with that being a thing that happens. Like, Titanic, I think it fits Oscar sensibilities, so I get why it wins. Titanic is a big movie, but also it is, you know, a movie that celebrates the artistic merit of bigness. It's literally Titanic, right? And I think that you get that. I think Oppenheimer is another example, right? Oppenheimer is obviously a movie that they spent a lot of money on. Everyone saw it in IMAX because Nolan refused to relinquish the screens. Like, there was a lot of bigness to Titanic. There's a lot of bigness to Oppenheimer, to where I think that there is a most movie about it, but I think that it also deserves it in a way that other things don't. So a different example would be a couple of years back, Nomadland is a little tiny movie, and Nomadland is absolutely the best picture of that year. That was 2021, for 2020. And Nomadland is up against some really good movies. It's up against The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago Seven. All great films that people are like, they're all bigger movies. And Nomadland is this tiny little indie film that no one saw then. I mean, some people did, movie nerds, but like, it's not like people have rushed out to go see it since then. It's just, it's a tiny little movie. It's a movie that was made for $5 million and made $39 million after, you know, most of which was after it won. So like, even with its Oscar push, it still is not even $100 million movie, and that's fine. I think that the Oscars are allowed to celebrate artistry, and sometimes that looks different than, you know, I think it's a fascinating award that can go to both you know, a $5 million movie about a lady in a van and can also go to this epic masterpiece about the explosion of the nuclear bomb that cost $100 million to make, a couple hundred million dollars to make. So,
Oh, there's something in there that triggered this. And now I can't remember what the transition is, but I'm just going to jump over. you were talking about like, well, Oscar's going to like celebrate and sometimes, you know, celebrate artistry or celebrate, you know, just good storytelling. Sometimes it seems like for the more niche film nerds, they get more angry about some of the smaller categories than like the big mainstream ones. So like when I was looking at this, I could tell, are you a real film geek if you mentioned Hoop Dreams not being nominated for Best Documentary in 1995?
It's like, that's criminal. What one that you're... Criminal.
And it wasn't even nominated, the Hoop Dreams, which I've watched twice in film school. I think in two different classes we had to watch Hoop Dreams. And like when you run through the list, it's like, of course, everyone knows Citizen Kane didn't win, or Wizard of Oz, or some of these, you know, big ones for Best Picture or some of the Best Actor or Actress snubs. But it's like, people who care about documentary filmmaking are still angry that Hoop Dreams wasn't nominated for Best Documentary.
I get a little bit that way
about some music stuff. I like checked some things about the music categories to see if there were any like, oh wow.
It was 1995 was the year Hoop Dreams came out, Mav.
Yeah, Maya Lin, A Strong Clear Vision, Complaints of a Dutiful Daughter, D-Day Remembered, Freedom of My Mind, A Great Day in Harlem. Maybe I've seen some of these. I don't remember any of them.
but I remember Hoop Dreams.
Like, absolutely.
I've watched it twice. I have it on DVD. Andrew, you were saying some of the music ones you feel that way about.
Yeah, like there's things where I'm like, hang on a second. Like, I know this music way better than that music, you know, it, like sometimes that feels like a very visceral thing, you know, because we recognize certain songs or certain scores and things like that. It does give me a chance to say who is the person who has won the most Oscars. There is a person who's been awarded more Oscars than this, but who has won the most competitive Oscars? It's in music categories.
It's either John Williams or one of the Alan Menken, right? It's got to be.
It is Alan Menken. He has won 8 times. He did that in a 6-year span.
Wow.
He won all 8 of his Oscars in a 6-year span. And then he has
it was that run where everything Disney put out won best song, right?
So he got he got song and score for Little Mermaid. He got song and score for Beauty and the Beast. He got song and score for Aladdin. And he got song and score for Pocahontas.
Wow. That's impressive.
Okay. So it was only 4 films. Six years and 4 films.
Anyone both categories for
both categories each time.
Each time. That's amazing.
Wow. And that's great trivia.
Well, because Williams,
he's nominated the most for anyone alive.
And right, but Alan his track Lincoln, record's not great. His track record no. is
and like, and actually I'm going to talk about some things that are like, wait a second, John Williams like should have gotten more recognition for some of these things. But like with Alan Menken, it's with like different collaborators. Because his initial collaborator died during that time. So he's also like mourning the death of one of his close friends while he's winning these things. He's working with different people.
And it's a different random pop star that does the song every time. It's like, hey, this time.
Well, no, he's nominated for songs in the movies because they're musicals. He's not nominated for the credit version. He's nominated for the real version.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh. All right. I'm getting angry. I just looked up John Williams' Oscar Academy Award run.
It's wild.
This is egregious.
Okay. Here's my, like, the thing that I feel most strongly about. John Williams was not nominated for Jurassic Park.
No.
And he should have won for Jurassic Park. I love Jurassic Park.
For the score, yeah.
He did win that year for Schindler's List. So he would have been up against himself.
It's true.
But you're right.
But, like, Jurassic Park's a great one.
I'd say Jurassic Park is a better score than Schindler's List.
Schindler's List, it's the one violin song is, is you know, that's, but throughout the film, I think
he's okay with Schindler's List. Well, I'm okay with Schindler's List winning, like, you know, every award in 1994, right? Like, I get it, but I think Jurassic Park's a better score.
It's an amazing score. Yeah, and then, you can comment, you can think about it all the time. Mm-hmm. John Williams never won for an Indiana Jones score.
Yeah, I think I knew that.
None He's of only the got Indiana Jones movies got him the score. He got nominated, but for multiple.
He hasn't won since 1994. What are we doing?
He's got what has he got? He's got like either five wins or six, right?
He has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. His first win was for Fiddler on the Roof, unexpected. And that's under adaptation. And then he won for Jaws and Star Wars. Great. You know, 2 years apart, but
those make
deserved.
Sense.
Mm-hmm. Then he wins in 83 for E.T. And then for Schindler's List.
Yeah. And Schindler's List. Like,
that's it.
Yeah. And so it's five wins for 54 nominations. Yeah. His track record is horrible. It's just like, oh, John Williams made a movie. Well, we got to put him out there.
I want to say this. That's not on John Williams. That's on the Academy. What are they doing here?
Okay. So. Comparable track record. Jerry Goldsmith, 18 nominations, one win. And Jerry Goldsmith's like a great movie composer.
Yeah. So John Williams is going to get lifetime achievement at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. Like they should just rename that category the Williams. Winning the Williams this year.
Okay, so in 1981, he was up for Raiders of the Lost Ark. He lost. And I'm like, this is one of those like, all right. He lost to Chariots of Fire.
Which, by the way, deserved.
If John Williams is writing Raiders of the Lost Ark, like on the year either side of that, you know, you feel like Raiders of the Lost Ark wins.
Which Raiders of the Lost Ark was nominated for Best Film before they were doing the award for Best Popular Film that they kind of do now, where they have a slot for a blockbuster film to be in the best. Like Raiders of the Lost Ark was a big film, both financially, at the box office and casual moviegoers, but also with the Academy. It had quite a few nominations.
And if I remember correctly, and again, I'm really young. This is the beginning of my pop culture nerddom. I'm like seven when this comes up, because I remember. The Oscar campaign for that year was amazing. And I remember people like much like today, it was like, is it going to be Golden Pond? Is it going to be Chariots of Fire? Is it going to be Raiders? And Chariots of Fire ends up winning Best Picture. But like that was everything had a real shot. Like, I don't think anybody thought Reds was going to win or what was the other one? Atlantic City. I don't think anybody thought those were going to win, but like Chariots of Fire, On Golden Pond, and Raiders had real shots. And I think for score, certainly Chariots of Fire and On Golden Pond, Chariots of Fire and Raiders had real shots, but also On Golden Pond was there, and Ragtime by Randy Newman was nominated that year too. So it was and also Dragon Slayer, which wasn't going to win. But the original score, like that was a tough year for a lot of categories. And, Chariots of Fire holds up, and even more so than the film holds up, soundtrack and score. Absolutely amazing.
And it's one of those ones where it's like, well, it's unique. It's different. It's special. And so it needs that win when it gets the chance. Can either of you think of anything about the score of Mary Poppins, which won Best Music Score in the 37th Oscars back in 1964?
The score, not the sound, not the individual songs?
Just the score. Yeah, not the songs.
Nothing's really leaking out for me. Nothing.
But can you think of the music to this loser? The Pink Panther.
Yes.
No.
Like instantly. And you're like, Pink Panther. That's one of those retrospective ones like, oh yeah, Pink Panther. So catchy. Like you've got to recognize that. And then guess not. Joseph. I know you feel strongly about this one. Magnificent Seven didn't win.
Oh, that is a good score. It just gets me excited to think about that score.
What's it up against?
It lost to Exodus, and it was also up against Spartacus, The Alamo, and Elmer Gantry.
I don't remember Exodus.
I don't know Elmer Gantry.
Spartacus has a good score.
Yeah, I think it's been a long time since I've watched Spartacus. But
in terms of songs, This one's kind of.
But in terms of like long term impact, I think Magnificent Seven will win that grouping. Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah. But for scores specifically, I guess.
So
it was used in a whole Cheers episode.
Yeah.
In 1979, the Muppet movie Rainbow Connection did not win for best song.
79 would have been
Norma Rae. It Goes Like It Goes.
Okay, I don't remember that. So I'm only five now, or I'm not even five. I'm four, so I actually am not as aware yet for these.
But you know, a couple years later, it's like Rainbow Connection. That's mm-hmm. the song of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean that. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Math.
We're getting to the point in the late 70s, early 80s. We're getting very much to the beginning of very snooty Academy, right? Like we're moving into the blockbuster film era with Jaws, and we're getting to the point where you're able to say, do we want to give an Oscar to that children's movie? You know,
and to the popular movie. Films.
Yeah. Yes.
Like we're shifting out of we're out of the studio era entirely. Right. And we've had the early new Hollywood, but now it's becoming the blockbuster era. And now it's mm-hmm. like, whoa. You know, the Academy Awards aren't about the blockbuster era. It's about mm-hmm. the art.
And then by the 90s, they got out of that attitude, at least for the song, because that's when, you know, Alan Menken was winning all of his best song. Mm-hmm. By the way. Just to throw this out there too, most of the time when he got best song, there were two or three songs from that movie nominated. So he was up against himself three times.
Up against himself
for Beauty and the Beast. So he had Beauty and the Beast, Be Our Guest, and Belle all nominated. And that was also up against When You're Alone from Hook and Everything I Do It For You from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
I'm seeing in John Williams' history, he's done that a few times.
Up against yourself.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he had Star Wars and Close Encounters of the Third Kind were the same year. It looks like he had Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and The River were nominated in the same year. Empire of the Sun and The Witches of Eastwick were the same year. Born on the 4th of July and Indiana Jones and Last Crusade. He didn't win any of these. He was just up against himself and someone else.
He was up against himself and loses.
Yes. Like you'd think it with the chance, he's got multiple chances there. Mm-hmm. Harry Potter and artificial intelligence was the same year. He's done that a couple times. Adventures of Tintin and Warhorse were the same year.
I'm by Spielberg. I'm at a point in all of my notes where I kind of want to like pass along some more trivia things that I've learned.
Oh, let's do it. Hit us with some trivia. Okay. I'm open for that.
Who has won the most, at least at this isn't going to constitute lifetime, but like for people who are alive, who has won the most for work on animated films?
For people who are alive, because yes. Walt certainly is the most overall.
Walt is the most nominated and winningest person that'll probably ever exist.
And it's not. And is Alan Menken still alive?
Alan Menken is still alive, but
he's only got eight.
Would be for not the music.
Oh, okay. So the producer on the most animated films.
Whoever
you're saying who takes home the Oscar for animated films, and that goes to the producer. The Oscar for animated films goes to the producers. So is that who you're saying? Like. Are you looking for an individual or a studio?
It'd be an individual.
I'll put it this way: it's a young enough category.
It's not Hayao Miyazaki.
Yeah. Well, that's only three. I think
you'd think it. You'd think it would be. It's
no. Pete he's Doctor. Only got who?
Pete Doctor, Pete Doctor has worked on Pixar and Disney films.
Okay.
And so he has four compared to Miyazaki's three.
Let's see. He has Incredibles
as
right?
the director for.
Yeah,
animated
that would have said
films.
Brad.
Brad Bird, right?
What did Pete Doctor do?
But then also, big picture, Pete Doctor worked as a writer on a lot of the Pixar films that won earlier. Okay. And so he, his association, like, makes him the most winning person associated with animated films.
Okay. Yeah, because it only goes back to Toy Story 2 is the first one. The animated picture Oscars.
Well, they created the best animated category.
I think Toy Story got the screenplay win that year too.
Right, but the best, but the best animated feature only goes back to
1990.
Yeah, okay, I was gonna say 99. So
'99, 2000. Yeah. So it's it's well after Toy Story, but you do have the occasional win for like best screenplay for an animated film.
I'll give Go ahead.
Oh, is there a supercut of the announcers making fun of animated films being for kids every year since they created the separate category? Because it seems like they do it every single year.
The first movie that won was Shrek. Yep. That's the first Academy Award winner for Best Animated Feature.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of years it only had three nominees.
Yeah, because it was because early on there weren't enough. I mean, animation at the level that it got to when it necessitated the award was not, you know, it was basically every year it was a Disney, a Pixar, and the other person who made a movie.
Yeah.
It's like here are the three. The three films.
In 2005, Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit won, which I appreciate Nick Park.
Okay.
I don't know that Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit is better than Corpse Bride and Howl's Moving Castle.
It's different.
Which is what it was up against.
I think it's different. I think that sometimes in a category that thin, right, where you only have three nominees, I think you can give the award to something where people, you know, because you're only choosing between three. And if you're not an animation fan, you look at Corpse Bride and you say, I've seen stuff that looks kind of like that before. And you look at
I've seen The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I know what this is all about.
And you look at Howl's Moving Castle, and you're like, well, that's some anime, all right? Like, that's Japanese animation. I've seen that before too.
Because they're not watching. Like people knew Miyazaki by then.
Right. So, but I'm saying the Academy voters are old. Even back then, they were old. They're not watching all these films. And if you look at them, if you look at 5 minutes worth of it, you say, well, I know what this is about, and I know what this is about, and Wallace and Gromit looks different.
All right, Matt, you may know this better than anyone else that I could possibly ask this question to. For a lot of the categories, you have to be a member of a specific guild to be able to vote in that category.
No, to be able to nominate. So the Oscars are weird. In order to nominate, nominations are done. The Oscars are very, very weird. Nominations are done by members in that area, but the entire voting body of the Academy gets to vote for the final awards for everything, and they're not required to watch everything in order to vote, with the exception of the two shorts categories. The three shorts categories, if you vote in the shorts categories, you're supposed to watch them all, but it's on an honor system.
But all Academy members can vote for all categories. They are given access to the films so that they can watch them
Choose. They're giving access to the films. They might or might not use that. Often they do not. We know for a fact, but you're supposed to make a good faith effort, but there's no policing of it. So yeah, anybody can vote, anybody who's in the Academy can vote, but it's a known problem they have. Yes.
What is the general makeup of the Academy? Like, what do you have to do to be a member of the Academy now?
The easiest way to get into the Academy is to win an Academy Award, but even then it's not automatic. So the Academy,
that's
basically
the easiest way.
That's the easiest way. Yeah, it's a thing, right? So the Academy is by invitation of the members of the Academy, specifically of the governing board, but like basically an Academy member can nominate you. You are investigated by the governing board, and they proffer you a invitation. Winning an Academy Award in pretty much any category essentially gets you looked at, for starters, and that's a good way to get in.
This sounds like the Skull and Bones.
It is. Oh, it is. It is entire. So the Academy, the problem with the Academy, whenever I just talk about Oscar so white and, you know, all the lack of diversity, it is definitionally an old boys network. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't pretend to be anything else. So
and you're talking about age and gender there.
Age both and gender. Yeah, well, and I mean, in the classic sense of the Old Boys Network, just that, you know, that quarter, like it is very much that. And it is that in makeup. They have attempted in the last 5 or 6 years to lower the age and add women and add people of color. And so because of a dedicated effort in the last like 5 or 6 years, the median age of Academy members has dropped from 68 to 64.
Oh, it's just dropping so fast.
That's
look at that.
The median age is in the 60s. Yeah, it's like a thing. And they made a big deal of the fact when they added Zendaya. Zendaya is a Academy member, and they made a big deal of, look, we're being hip and young. And it's like, and I'm positive that Zendaya got an invitation because she is female, black, and young. So if somebody was like, hey, we can do all of them by just nominating this one person. And like, it's really like a problem. But it means that once you understand that, you sort of start understanding, well, why aren't there more films directed by women? And it's because the members of the Academy are, you know, overwhelmingly of one gender, overwhelmingly of one race, and overwhelmingly of a certain age. So those are the ones that just they nominate the stuff that they've seen. Like that's, I mean, and because obviously, of course, that's what you would do. So it makes it harder if you're not in, you know, in the group of people who, you know, Scorsese will always be nominated because, of course, I'm going to watch the Scorsese movie.
Same with Spielberg, not to say they don't deserve it, but
I'm a huge fan. It's a lot harder to get their attention if you're Greta Gerwig. Like that's the problem. Now, Greta Gerwig got nominated because she didn't get nominated for director, but she got nominated for Best Picture for Barbie because there was no way to ignore it, right? You get to nominate 10 and everyone in the world is talking about this Barbie movie. So I guess we better go see it. And that's how it ends up there. So it's a whole thing
for everything except for director.
Yes. And I'm actually, I'm actually more okay with her not getting nominated for director than everybody else was. Like, I understand where people are coming from, where they wanted her to be. But having seen those films, I cannot.
10 best pictures, but only 5 best director.
Yeah. And people are like, well, how can it be nominated for one, but not the other? Because it didn't direct itself. I'm like, because you have twice as many. And I am not willing to bump any of the directors that got nominated for best director. Those movies are all excellent, and they all, you know, they all had really, really good direction. And it's not like I can say, oh, Anatomy of the Fall didn't deserve it. Yeah, it did. Mm-hmm. You know, like all of them did. And I think Barbie arguably did too, but you only get 5 slots. Now they could increase the number of slots, but like that's the problem. So,
and I've not seen all of them, so I can't speak, but I will say, like, on the face of it, I would say the degree of difficulty of making Barbie good is perhaps harder than some of these other.
Oh, sure.
make it feel like a functional film, with all of the strange pastiche and surrealism that they did. Greta Gerwig had an amazing vision that was brought to light, but I have not seen the others, so I can't offer critique on the comparison.
Random trivia for you that I'm wondering if you came across, Andrew. How many times has the MCU been nominated for visual effects, and how many wins has it had?
I did not find that trivia.
Ooh. I don't even have a guess. Can you tell me?
I believe it is 14 nominations and 0 wins. The MCU has never won. They have never won a visual effects thing. They have like 3 Oscars or 4. They have 4 Oscars. Mm-hmm. None of them are for visual effects. It's absolutely amazing. No one understands how, because they're nominated for almost every picture. Not quite all of them, but almost every single time. It's like the thing with Peter O'Toole, where it's just like, oh, okay, well, yeah, of course we're going to nominate that. Oh, well, you'll get them next time, you know. So
you're going to have another chance.
Yeah. But they've lost for Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Avengers, Iron Man 3, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, of Infinity War, Endgame, Shang-Chi, Spider-Man, No Way Home, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and Guardians of the Galaxy 3 all have been nominated for Best Visual Effects. None of them won. Because you're just like,
oh, I sort of feel like a personal grudge at a certain point.
Just, there's just always something else to do, right? Like, so like yeah. this year, Best Visual Effects was, you know, it could have been Guardians year, except that it was up against Godzilla Minus One, which is amazing. Right.
It's just like, completely fair. You can't actually knock it.
Yeah. And it was up against The Creator and Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, which we know, and then Napoleon, because we needed a fifth slot and Napoleon wasn't going to win. But like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 looks great. And in any other year, you're like, oh, yeah, it's a shoe-in.
And it's also Godzilla, like, it's super distinctive, too. Like, it's the pop arty sensibility and this color palette and they make it all work.
Did you see Godzilla Minus One?
I haven't yet. It needs to come out on streaming. I'm going to see it as soon as it's available on streaming.
It's amazing. It is an amazing feat of, like,
I've heard nothing but praise, and I've had already listeners request that we cover it. I'm like, I haven't seen it yet. I can't cover it.
Great movie. Hard to follow because, I mean, it's a read the subtitles kind of film, but great movie. And visually you go, wow, how did you make this movie for $47? Because I mean, the budget is I think the budget is $10 million or something, or five. It's really low.
It was a fraction of an average Hollywood film, not even a blockbuster Hollywood film, just an average Hollywood film.
Or 10 or 15 or something. It's really low. And Godzilla looks amazing, and they do the Jaws thing, which is, you know, we've got a budget of $47, so we're gonna use it sparingly, you know?
Hinting at the monster for a lot of it.
Yeah, and when Godzilla shows up, you feel his impact. You're like, oh, that's Godzilla. Yeah, and then, you know, just watching, if you get a chance to pull the YouTube footage of them getting nominated, and they're just
delighted. See that already. I watched that.
Yeah. And when they win, it's just like, I've never been happier for anybody in my life than I am. It's like, oh.
And I've also seen the Godzilla shoes they had made for it.
Yeah, they just really, like, the people who are just like, oh, how are we at this party? Well, this is great, you know, like... Similar to the year,
everyone that's at that party should be talking to them. Like, how did you do that? Can you tell us? Because we're spending way too much money.
The year before, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever nominated, and it was up against Top Gun: Maverick, The Batman, All Quiet on the Western Front, and it didn't matter because Avatar: Way of Water just was obviously going to win, and they did.
Right.
So yeah, like, and that's
not going to be your year.
Right,
and that's been 14 nominations, I guess.
Right, that's been the MCU for every single picture that they've made and had nominated. They're nominated almost every year, and they never win because there's always like a, you know, the year before that, Spider-Man: No Way Home, up again, and Shang-Chi both nominated, two MCU films nominated, but that's the year of Dune.
Two bites at the apple.
But that's the year of Dune, so you know what are you gonna do?
Dune is such a beautiful picture. It is so beautiful.
And that is like it's the Laden life of the MCU. Like, they're, you know, the hardest working effects house in the world, horribly underpaid, and yet they can't get over the line. They can't get over the line because, like, there's just always one film every single time where it's like, oh, well, yeah, but Dune. Oh, well, yeah, but Avatar. Oh, well, yeah, but Godzilla. You know, like, that's how the MCU works.
Andrew, as we're going to be wrapping up here, did you have any other trivia that you wanted to share with us?
I'm pretty sure I got it all out of my system.
Mav, any other snubs you want to make sure we note before we wrap up?
We've resolved nothing.
As is tradition.
Yes. So, yeah, I don't know. This has been real fun, guys. Thanks for joining me. This was, you know, always great to have a show like this. where it's like little effort because we're just gonna do it in two places. So thanks, guys.
Always happy to jump onto the Vox Podcast, and happy to have you on the Protagonist Podcast, even if it's not the exact same episode, you know.
Well, speaking of, where can people find you?
I host the weekly Protagonist podcast, where each week we talk about a great character and a great story. And Andrew is the producer of that. And he is very frequently also on the Protagonist podcast. But Andrew, you have another project as well.
Yeah. Disney Animation Minute Essentials. You've probably heard of it. if you're listening to this, I'm sure you've heard of it at some point.
Well, I've been on that show. Hannah's been on that show. Joe's been on that show. Many other guests that you've heard on Vox Pop have been on that show, and I imagine guests that you've heard on Protagonist. It's fun. It is a fun thing to do. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, all of the places, always at Chris Maverick. You can follow the show on Twitter, Blue Sky, or Facebook right now. Those are the three places that we're posting. At Vox Popcast, you can follow the show's blog at www.voxpopcast.com, where we post about whatever we're going to be talking about next week. I think that's going to be an interesting show about music covers, and, you know, when a song is covered and you don't even know it's covered. And, you know, I don't know. My wife's planning that show with Wayne. It should be interesting, though, so you should check it out. If you enjoy the show, and we certainly hope you do, then please subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify or Pandora or wherever you get podcasts from. And do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review, especially on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, that gooses the algorithm, makes us more popular, and really helps us out. I would like to thank Maximilian of Thoughtform Music for our epic theme song, building ever so more epically and playing us out. I'd once again like to thank Andrew and Joseph for joining me. I'd like to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.